This is Pat Save with the Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Wow, it's exciting. I have two wonderful guests today, and, well, I am in the mood for a cozy mystery, and so one came along, and I said, woo, I needed this. I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Deborah H. Goldstein. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Patsy. Thank you for having me today.
Well, this is so much fun for me because I love your Sarah Blair mysteries, and this is book number 5, right?
It is.
And it's named.
Next week.
And I know we're a little early, but I've been, so booked up that I wanted to make sure I got you on because I think this is such a terrific book. It's called 5 Bells Too Many. So perfect for book 5. And it is a delightful, absolutely delightful book.
Thank you. I've had a lot of fun writing it.
Well, I love the cover. Of course, it's a Kensington cover. And Carol J. Perry, who is also a Kensington author, pointed out that your cat on the cover is much larger than her cat on the cover of her Kensington books. And her cat is named Orion, and he's a little bit jealous because this is such a very, very beautiful cover.
Well, thank you. That was one of the factors when we started, even with book one. They asked me what I liked about covers, and I had no idea what they would do. And I said, well, I wanted the cat to be emphasized. And they've done that on all 5. I think Kensington does great covers.
Oh, they do beautiful covers. They're distinctive, memorable. They're the kind of covers, the books that you sort of want to keep laying around the house. You know, you just stop and look at it. It's so lovely. And this one is particularly fun because, well, tell us about the bells, because this is bells with an E. So we have 5 bells too many, and it's a fun story.
They are Southern bells. The books are set in a fictional town called Wheaton, Alabama. And Sarah Blair, for those who don't know it, was married at 18, divorced at 28, and all she got out of the marriage was Rara, the cat that's on the cover. She has been refinding herself, you might say. She has a twin sister who is a chef who knew from day one she wanted to be a chef. And she has a mother, Maybelle, who is a true Southern bless-your-heart type mother. And in this case, when Sarah Blair's mother is a finalist to win the perfect Southern wedding in a real reality TV show, Sarah is forced to be her mother's chaperone. After the show's producers found dead, with Sarah's greatest nemesis kneeling over the body, Sarah must find the true killer before any of the other contestants or crew are permanently eliminated.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty much it in a nutshell.
That's it in a nutshell, and there's a lot to go with it. It's so much fun. Well, I think I always love books that have, well, feature cats and feature weddings, and I think it's so much fun for the, you know, for people, really, the beauty of cozy mysteries is that you do escape for a little while, and particularly right now with all the bad news the past few months, people really need this kind of escape. When you're reading this book, you forget everything, and then you have certain characters that you love and that you start sort of visualizing in your head, like like her mother.
She's a hoot.
Oh, she is a hoot. I love it. I think it's terrific. And so, you know, when you came out with this idea, isn't it exciting, this process?
Oh, yeah. Well, for me, as you know, my background, I was a lawyer and a judge. And this is the kind of book I read for the same reason you were just talking about. It was escape. It was something I could read easily on an airplane. So when I went to do this, the idea of just writing a fun Southern cozy series, kind of like an Anne George book, and it was just exactly what I wanted to do.
Well, and it's an important, really, people who need just something to take their mind off of terrible things when they turn to a cozy mystery, and they get into the world of the cozy mystery, and you certainly do that. What I love about your writing is that you really paint a picture for us, so we see things in our mind, and we're right into the story.
Well, that's the idea. The idea is to give you a whodunit and make you feel like you're in the middle of it and you can solve it. You have all the characters, you have all the elements, but more importantly, you get to the point that you feel like you know which way the street goes, which way the characters go. You almost feel like Rah-Rah the cat can come right up to you, and or Fluffy the dog could be there waiting for you at the door.
Well, absolutely, and I do like Rara. If I was ever going to have a cat, I would have a Siamese. I just like the look of them.
Well, they're intelligent, but I will tell you a secret. I was not as knowledgeable about them. So to write the book, I had to go and research them, but I had to do it by like interviewing friends. And I had one friend who owned all these Siamese cats over the years. And she sat there for 3 hours. I watched her. I watched the cat. And all of a sudden, it all came together. It had to be a Siamese cat in these books. And when Kensington asked what the cat should look like, because I had mentioned it was tan, et cetera, I stole her cat.
Well, it was a good choice. I think it was a perfect choice. So this, tell us about Maybelle some more. You've really developed her character along the way. I really enjoy reading about her.
Well, in the first book, you never meet her. You just know that both of her daughters live in fear of her in their own way and at the same time adore her.
Exactly.
In the second book, she in Two Bites Too Many, she appears and she takes on the bank president and nobody is immune from her. But by this book, she's settled down a little, and she has the idea that she and her friend George should enter this competition as a lark, because she is smart enough to realize that not only will they need 25-year-old finalists, they're going to need somebody over 60, too, to have the demographics work.
Uh-huh.
And so she enters the contest, and sure enough, she becomes one of the five finalists. Of course, she is the type who has her nose in everything, but at the same time, she does it with such grace and dignity. Truly the Southern Belle.
Absolutely, and it's fun. I think the concept was very nice because people are always, people enjoy this reality kind of programs where people win things, and so this is always, people have this image of them winning something, and so when they read about somebody doing that, they really enjoy it.
Well, I think, you're in the business, so you know that people listen to you, they listen to the show, but they don't know what really goes on behind the scenes, all the details. And that was the fun part, to have a show come to from New York to Wheaton, Alabama, and you have to take the Wheatonites and you have to take the New Yorkers and put them together, in a sense, the cast and the crew. But more importantly, you have the fun of the reality of what's going on behind the scenes.
Exactly. That is the great thing in this book. You know, it's so much fun when I'm reading and I see a story in my head and I see it as a very visual story. And that's what happens with your writing. What do you like to write best, the exposition part, or do you like dialogue? You're very good at dialogue.
Dialogue. I have to remember to go back in and put in the exposition. I have to remember to go back in and put in thoughts, because to me, everything comes out in words between people.
Well, I got that feeling. I was thinking, this is really great dialogue, because but it's dialogue that moves the story along, that I really appreciate that kind of dialogue.
Well, thank you. I think that, having spent years on the bench listening to people talk and listening to their stories and watching them for credibility and things like that, my ear is more attuned for dialogue than it is all the scenery around it. So I have to remember to make sure I give you enough of that picture so that you get the feeling of the small town and such that you mentioned, Patsy. But at the same time, that through the dialogue, you actually feel like you're in there.
So how many years were you a judge?
I was a judge for 23 years. I was lucky to get on the bench at a very young age. I was only 36 when I was appointed. The average age for my federal administrative law judge was 58. And as I reached the age, I will tell you one quick anecdote. The reason I left the bench, I had a lifetime appointment. I had sold my first book, and then there had been some headlines, you know, Judge Wright's book, but I tried to keep the two careers separate. Then what happened is I was in court, and I had all the lawyers trained. At the end of every hearing, they would say, is there anything further? I would say no. You know, they would say no, and I would then close the hearing. On this particular day, I asked the attorney. He said no. Everything was going fine until his client said, yes, Your Honor, there's one more thing. I looked at the lawyer, and he raised his hands to heaven, and I knew this was a great lawyer, but he couldn't control this client. So I looked at the client, and I said, yes, sir, what is it? He says, Your Honor, I just want you to know, no matter how you rule, I'm going to buy your book. At that moment, I can tell you, Patsy, I'm sure he didn't buy it. I ruled against him. But I went home, and I said to my husband, because I had a new book coming out, I said, you know, we just got the last kid out of school. Maybe it's time for me to run the numbers with you, and if everything works, maybe it's time for me to follow my passion as opposed to sitting on the bench for another 20 years. Because if I can stay healthy, I can have a lot of fun, and that's what I've been doing, and Five Bells is the newest version of my fun.
Well, I think that's a wonderful story, and it's true that once you find that joy on paper that I tell people about all the time, I say, you know, once you start writing and you see your words, and then you realize how much happiness you're bringing to people, I can see that it was a good decision.
Oh, I'm having a ball. I've been doing read-alongs and book discussions of all these books, and I'll be doing one of Five Bells on July 26th. And it's just so much fun for people from all over the country zoom in on these things and talk. And it's just wonderful to see how it interacts with them, how they react to the books, and how they get the enjoyment. What you were asking about in the very first questions, it takes them away from the real world for a few hours.
Well, I think it's wonderful. And Kensington, of course, is one of the, I mean, they are just great. They do these wonderful promotions, and they really go out there and reach a wide audience for their writers so that you have this opportunity to talk to lots of people.
Oh, I find them very easy to work with, and as you said, the covers are great, and I'm having a ball. I'm in my second childhood.
Well, it's probably
so Mama Maybell.
Well, it's probably a good idea. It's not so much fun to sit in the court in these days. It's you'd be writing, I don't know, very hard-boiled kind of fiction if you probably stayed in court. But this kind of writing is giving a lot of people happiness, and you're doing a wonderful, wonderful. I think it's just when you can give this kind of joy, it's a wonderful thing.
Well, I wanted to write cozies, and Sarah Blair, you know, most cozies have crafts, cooking, etc., but I knew that I don't do any of those really well myself. So when I did Sarah Blair, I said, wait a minute, what about me? What about the kind of person who finds cooking or being in the kitchen absolutely frightening? And that's how I came up with Sarah. She is literally a person who finds being in the kitchen more frightening than murder. And that exactly gives people freedom, because people like us who are readers can laugh with her, can enjoy with her, and can watch her grow.
When you came out with the idea, so you made an imaginary town,
yes,
which is always fun. This is real world building.
Mm-hmm. It is. I made it. Wheaton, Alabama was based on a lot of the small southern towns that when I was a litigator I ran around. You know, it'll have the square in the middle. It'll have people. Everybody knows what everybody's doing, and you know if there's a stranger. And at the same time, it's fun to bring. That's one of the reasons I brought the New York crew in to do this television show in this small town, because it has a big impact on those who were in town.
Oh, yeah. I grew up in a small town, and boy, when people would come from outside, we would get so excited. It was unbelievable.
Well, if I remember, you're from Michigan, isn't it?
Yeah, the Upper Peninsula.
And I grew up in Jackson.
Oh, okay. Well, I think we had 1,400 people in our town. But when an event would happen, like the 4th of July parade, in those days we used to have big 4th of July parades, and they would show up in our town, it was so exciting.
Mm-hmm. And everybody comes out, everybody gets into it, and one way or the other, they're going to try to become part of it. And in this book, there's only so many places they can go for meals, et cetera. So it helps take the narrowness of the small town, but it helps you focus on exactly where. And the reader who is already knows these restaurants, knows the bed and breakfast, they know the why Sarah is staying in the nemesis, because the only bed and breakfast belongs to her nemesis.
And, of course, I also enjoyed the part about Chef Bernardi.
Yes. I enjoyed having different aspects of him and bringing in a little, shall we say, gambling and such.
Well, I think it's a wonderful book. And so I'm sure you're working on book six, but this is one of the things, you know, of course, now, of course, I think you can probably start doing also some live events instead of just the Zoom events, huh?
I'm hoping to. Some of them have, there are a few things live coming up, but for the most part, everybody's kind of still in a back and forth. Shall it be live or shall it not? I'll be at Sleuth Fest, and we'll start seeing probably some live stuff in mid-July. Right now, things are blogging and virtual for the next few weeks.
Yeah, I didn't do BoucherCon this year either. It's just been so iffy. You don't know. It's as much about traveling as what happens there, you know?
Exactly.
And so I think...
At least we know we can get into these books and we can just stay home and read a little bit.
That's right. Find a nice spot under a tree like I used to. I just want to tell people, it is so wonderful, actually, to sit outside under a tree and read. And so many people do not do that. They just, if you have the opportunity, if you have a place where you can go, like a botanical garden near you, just sit under a tree. And the sound of the trees as you're reading, it's like an orchestra in your head.
And it brings you joy on paper.
It does. It does. Well, I want to thank you, you know, so much for being on Joy on Paper. I think I love when somebody has followed their dream. And this is what I talk about so often. You know, sometimes people will think that they're too old to start a new career. They're too old to, you know, try something new. But when you do and you find, as you have, the fun and the joy of it, it's wonderful. It's a beautiful thing.
Following the passion is something one cannot understand until one does it.
And the beautiful thing about writing is you can keep going and going and going, because, you know, I had Eugenia Lovett West was on my program for her 99th birthday, and she just wrote a book about cybercrime.
Well, I hope I am still going at that point as well, and we can come back by that.
Well, Mary Higgins Clark was, the last time she was on my program, she was 89 years old. So, you know,
That gives me another 20 years.
That's what I'm saying. You've got another 20 years, probably. This series will be going on, and you'll probably start another series. And that's where you have this wonderful, wonderful point in your life where you are doing what you love.
Exactly. And it's wonderful.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. People can pre-order it now. The release date is when?
June 28th.
June 28th.
So right now, if they pre-order it now, they'll have it probably the very day it opens next week.
Yeah, they will. And I want to tell my listeners, it is a wonderful thing to do for an author, is to pre-order, because Amazon takes note of that. If you pre-order any author's work, as a matter of fact, Mary Higgins Clark loved all of her readers because so many of them did pre-order. And, mm-hmm. well, that's why her publishing company loved her so much. But it really makes a big difference. So pre-order this book today. It's called Five Bells, and that's Bells with an E, Southern Bells, Five Bells Too Many. And it's book five by Deborah H. Goldstein. And you have a website you want people to go to?
Yes, HTTPS, www.deborahhgoldstein.com.
Okay.
If they go to my website, deborahhgoldstein.com, they can actually download for free. Kensington put together a really cute recipe book, Simple Recipes for the Sometimes Sleuth.
Oh, that's great. A free recipe book. If you go to Deborah H. Goldstein's website.
.com.
And it will, wow, that's great. I'm going to do that myself. And again, it's a Sarah Blair mystery, number five. And you will, everybody, you will love it. It's really fun. And again, Deborah, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And Carol J. Perry wanted me to say a special hello to you from her cat, Orion, who she loves. And he has quite a following, too.
I hope he gets a bigger place on his next cover.
Yeah, that's what she's hoping to, because the last, you know, he was just... Well, he has a big ego, and he really doesn't appreciate being, you know, not right there in your face. So isn't it funny how these animals take over your life?
Oh, as I've said, he's the alpha male.
That's okay. Well, Deborah, it was fun talking to you. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, I love this book. I love books with weddings in them, which reminds me that Carol J. Perry had just, her book number 12 had a wedding in it. But we're going to have a book buzz for her other series, because here, again, she came out with she made up a town here, right here in our area of Florida, just south of us, near St. Petersburg, and it's called Haven, Florida. And so she's written a book, a new series, and book one is already out, and book two is coming in September. So let's hear the book buzz from Rita Moreau.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with today's book buzz. If you are looking for a mystery that you won't be able to put down, then I have just the book for you.
Be My Ghost, a Haunted Haven Mystery Book 1. Cozy mystery fans, you'll be thrilled with Carol J. Perry's Be My Ghost Book 1 in her new Haunted Haven Mystery Series set in Florida. Maureen Daughtry is a smart, forthright protagonist of this exceptional paranormal cozy. As Publishers Weekly notes in their starred review, Maureen is a breath of fresh air in the cozy world. No ruminating on her looks or past tragic loves. No drowning her sorrows in cookies and cake. It all starts on a cold and rainy day in Boston when Maureen's career as a sportswear buyer hits a snag just before Halloween, when the department store declares bankruptcy. The former buyer of the year needs to start job searching, and fast. Salvation comes when she receives a mysterious inheritance. An inn in Haven, Florida, a quaint scenic town on the Gulf of Mexico, hidden away from highways and theme parks. The letter from the lawyer doesn't explain why someone named Penelope Josephine Gray would leave her a century-old Haven House Inn. Should she pick up and head south? Why not? Finn, her golden retriever who flunked guide dog classes because he's too friendly, would probably like to get some fun in the sun. Better than walking the cold and wet streets of Boston in October. Maureen hopes it will be a fresh start. She doesn't know what to expect, but what the heck? It's an adventure. So she packs up her car, and with Finn, riding shotgun, and a box of Cane's Donuts between them, she heads south. From the way Finn's wagging his tail, it looks like he approves of the move. The lawyer didn't tell her much, just that over the years, many famous people vacationed in Florida, and many of them stayed at Haven Inn. When she pulls up to the old place, she is enchanted by the rocking chairs on the front porch. But within hours, before she can even unpack her bags, Maureen discovers a prominent ghost hunter's lifeless body on the inn's front porch. What was he doing there? Not the welcome she expected. Worse, soon the police have their eyes on her as a suspect. She has no friends in Florida to help her, but some of the inn's everlasting tenants in the form of ghosts offer their otherworldly talents in order to help her solve the mystery. The ghosts, in a refreshing departure from most paranormal cozies, don't take center stage in entertaining subplots such as her efforts to discover why Miss Gray left her the inn keep the pages turning in this fast-paced cozy. The Haunted Haven series will beguile and bewitch readers, and have them eagerly looking forward to further adventures with Maureen and, of course, her pal Finn. Look forward to more fun and mystery in Glorious Haven, Florida.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, and I am thrilled to welcome a book lover and a great writer to Joy on Paper, Eve Carlin. Hi, Eve.
Hi, Patsy. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a thrill that you're going to be talking about your wonderful book called Track 61. And I love this book. It's really great. But I want to say also that I was so happy to discover that you are such a book lover, and that you work with books, and that you received the 2021 James Patterson Holiday Bookseller Bonus Award.
Right, right. Shout out to James Patterson and all he does to support independent bookstores.
Fantastic. So you have a bookstore called Bookhampton?
It's not my store.
No, but you sell there. So
I absolutely, and I run the book club, and I am there most days. Yes, Bookhampton in East Hampton, New York.
Well, it is fantastic. As a book, I always dreamt of starting a bookstore, but I, you know, anyway, that's a long story. But I love this book, because I love historical books. I love any book actually set in New York City. I love New York City. And so this one was particularly fun, and because it's also about Grand Central Station.
Right, yeah. I, too, love New York City and New York City history. And I was kind of poking around trying to find a great storyline. And one of the places I began looking was Grand Central. And as I delved into the history there, I learned about a couple secret sub-basements, one an abandoned rail track, one a secret sub-basement. And as I looked further into the story, I was kind of chilled to learn of the personal connections that I have to the story.
Well, explain that, because this is fascinating. Of course, for many people don't realize that they almost tore Grand Central Station down.
Right. Well, I think it was thanks to Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis that had it listed as a landmark. But Grand Central is truly a sight to be seen if you're visiting New York City. It's a beautiful, beautiful station. That said, it also holds lots of secrets. And one of those secrets is a secret sub-basement called M42. That is the deepest basement in New York City. It lies 10 stories below Grand Central. And rumor has it that during World War II, in 1942, M42 and potentially Track 61, which is an abandoned rail track, was the target of Nazi saboteurs.
And so once you had that in mind, you ran with this story.
Well, I did, and it was a natural kind of run, as opposed to the more trying ones that I jog every morning on. I learned, when I heard that, I knew from my childhood growing up on Long Island, off the coast of Long Island in 1942, amazingly, a U-boat landed for Nazi saboteurs on an operation called Operation Pistorius. They were on a sabotage mission. Their mission was to destroy aluminum plants or power such as M42 to curtail the power that would have provided power to plants. And when I read that, I realized that I had this really unique personal connection, because I had grown up in a house that was just really steps away from where these men landed on the beach in 1942.
Wow, that is a great connection. That must have, yeah. You must have gotten tingles with that.
I still do, because somehow when you go, I'm on that beach almost every day, and when you're on the beach, there isn't a whole lot of, thank goodness, you know, development. So you can see it exactly as it might have appeared, you know, 80 years ago.
Well, so tell us about how you came out with the storyline, the characters, because it is also a romance.
Right, yeah. So in the house where I grew up, I had grown up with my family and my parents and my maternal grandparents, who were German Jews who had fled Hitler. And the irony that my German Jewish grandmother had sat on that very beach and watched my sister and I build sandcastles where these, you know, Nazis had landed, struck me as being very significant. And I set about, through the wonders of historical fiction, kind of weaving those stories together, creating a character based on my grandmother who would encounter one of the saboteurs and become entangled in his plight.
Well, you weave a wonderful story. I thought it was so exciting as I'm reading it. I just, knowing, you know, this sort of this time period, and of course, America at war, and everybody really not knowing what was going on, and people were aware of the U-boats out there, but they did not ever expect anyone to actually land, and, you know, saboteurs to land.
Right, absolutely. Not only did they land, it was a group of Operation Pistorius, a group of eight men. Four were landed off the coast of New York, four more off the coast of Florida. They landed, and they might easily have gotten away with their sabotage mission, which would have been detrimental to the war effort.
Oh, definitely. Because I look out here to the Gulf of Mexico, where there were U-boats. And even now, you know, when you think about it, it's hard to believe that the U-boats came all the way into the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, it is amazing. You know, to me, I'm forever fascinated by history and, you know, things that could have changed so easily, like, you know, sliding doors kind of scenarios.
So tell us about your main characters. How did you, the relationship that you formed with these people?
Well, so I focused on the group of the four men who had landed close to my home. And when I began my research, I discovered a 3,000-page military trial transcript that covered their military tribunal. So I read that, and from that, I learned a couple things. And I learned that everything wasn't necessarily black and white, good and evil. So I was able, more than I thought I would be able to create rich characters whose stories were complex. Most significantly, the story of Peter Berger, who I chose to focus on. Peter had been a naturalized U.S. citizen. He had lived in the United States for many years. He had even been a member of the National Guard. He returned to Germany when his family asked him to in the early 30s. He was, at that time, a member of the Nazi Party, and he was sent as a journalist to Poland, where he reported on Nazi atrocities there, and his report landed him in a Gestapo prison. On his release, he was told to participate in this espionage sabotage operation. So I found when I started to delve into Peter's character, I was really surprised that I was more sympathetic to him than I thought I would be. So the second character I kind of created was a character based on my grandmother, who would have been a young woman at the time. And the story is told through her perspective, which was more natural for me. And she meets a character based on Peter Berger at a parade in New York City the morning after the men landed. They arrived in New York City, and they arrived on Flag Day, the day of the largest military parade in U.S. history, with 2 million spectators. So it seemed kind of like a fabulous setting to create this meeting between the two main characters, Greta and Peter.
Well, everything just played into your hands, sort of, having the Flag Day, having it just worked out perfectly. It was like Beshert. It was meant to be.
Right. Beshert is the word my father often says. Yes, I saw that on your website, and yes, it resonated with me.
Yeah, it's funny. These things happen. It's a strange connection sometimes that you doing one thing and then something else connects you to another thing. And I love that. I mean, that is a perfect word. And particularly in this case, when we're talking about a Jewish girl, I think it's just so wonderful when that happens.
I find that it can happen. It's almost like the 6 degrees of separation. I think if you're looking for it, and you can find these connections.
Well, you did some great research here into the period. Of course, it's wonderful that you can nowadays look at the old newspapers and much, much more easily than in the old days when you had to use microfiche.
Right, yeah, no. I mean, Google is a phenomena, as is the New York Times website, and so many of these newspaper archives are terrific. Also, I watched lots of old movies trying to get the language correct. It just was an awful lot of fun.
Well, you certainly have written a delightful story from the point of view of the romance part, and then keeping the suspense going. People don't know. I'm never sure what people know about the period. Because it was a serious situation here to have really spies on our soil.
Absolutely. It was very serious, and it really could have changed the outcome of the war. you know, yes, is this historical fiction, but there's certainly an undertone. And it's a story that some people know in my neck of the woods, but I also find many people know that the men landed here, and fewer know what ultimately happened to them.
That's true. Very few people, I think, know the whole story. And certainly you have this element of suspense in, so people who don't know what happened will be sort of on tenterhooks, you know, as they read about it. Mention particularly Track 61 and what that was about FDR.
Right. So Track 61 is a private rail spur, now abandoned, that lies under Grand Central and had been used to transport distinguished guests. Most notably, FDR took Track 61 when he came to New York, or even used it when he was going up to his home in New York State at Hyde Park. It was his private rail train that went in there. If he was visiting Manhattan, there is an elevator there large enough to accommodate his limousine that would take him from Grand Central up to the Waldorf Astoria. There's a very kind of unassuming door on East 49th Street off of Park Avenue, a brass door by the side of the Waldorf that is said to lead down to Track 61. And you can look online and see photos of the abandoned track.
Now, did you get a tour? How much cooperation did you get from the people at Grand Central?
I did not get a tour. Very, very few people seem to be able to manage to get a tour. I think for a whole lot of reasons. I'm not even sure it's so safe to wander down there. And secondly, I learned that we all say abandoned, and it is abandoned, but as recently as 2003, the track was a potential alternative escape route for George W. Bush and Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice when they were at the UN General Assembly shortly, a couple years after 9/11. So it still is potentially an outlet for if you're trying to escape Manhattan for important figures.
Wow. It's something that's fascinating. That's a fascinating story.
Yeah.
Of course, you spend time in the hall. It is so wonderful just to sit there and look at this magnificent building.
Right. No, the ceiling mural that was originally painted backwards because the plan was being looked down on or something. It's a celestial mural that had east to west reversed. The opal clock, which is famous for so many rendezvous, which is said to cost $20 million. There's just the architecture of Grand Central is truly beautiful.
It is, and it was actually Jacqueline Kennedy, I think it was 1978, she brought it all the way to the Supreme Court to get, you know, a rule that they can't destroy this. We have several buildings here in our area that were all also, the wrecking ball was actually outside of the building, ready to knock it down until, you know, people managed to put a stop to it. But I cannot imagine them. Anyone wanting to destroy that building?
Well, yeah. Nor can I. But it was Penn Station originally was beautiful too. I think in Madison Square Garden. I mean, it's very sad the things that happen.
It is.
I'm happy to have been able to draw attention to Grand Central in any small way.
Well, I think you will. I hope it's on sale. That they should put a nice little rack there.
They should really.
They really should because, well, when you go through there and you are actually looking for a book to buy,
right?
I think they should actually put a special display for you because it's a great book. It's lots of fun to read, and I so appreciate what you've put into it of the historical side of the research. But talk a little bit more about your love of books and what's happening in the book world with you. Oh, and I also forgot to mention, you have triplets, really?
Yes, I read and I have been a really avid reader to escape my triplets for many years. They're 24 now, so that's all past. But when they were babies is when I started to write my first book. Prior to that, I had worked in publishing at Random House. And so I have always had a love of books. And I think I've been really privileged because I've been able to see it in-house, working at a publisher, as a writer, and also as a bookseller, which is very, very interesting.
Well, I think it's wonderful just to be around books all day.
Mm-hmm. It is. There are so many fabulous books. It is hard to pick a favorite, for sure. People come in and they want to know, you know, what are you reading? What do you love most? You know, who can say? There's so many fabulous books out there, and you do a wonderful job publicizing them. So thank you so much.
Well, I love it. I just love to help authors promote their books, and I promote books, you know, they might have written 4 years ago or 5 years ago, and authors are always so surprised. They'll say, well, you're promoting my book on, like, social media. I will put something up because I reread books that I love. And so this is part of the fun. When I named this program Joy on Paper, I meant it because the joy of writing, to see your words on paper, and then the joy of that it gives people, and in so many cases, it takes them away from other things in their lives, gives them that pleasure.
I agree 100%. And even through the whole pandemic situation, we had our book club, we met via Zoom, and we were able to, you know, come out of the moment of the gravity of the seriousness of the situation and just talk about things other than what was being covered in the newspaper. And it really was a wonderful way to come together.
Well, how can people get in on your book club, your Zoom events?
You can look me up at www.evecarlin.com. Everything, all the publicity I'm doing for the book is on my website. I run the book club through Bookhampton, so that is our local bookstore out here on the east end of Long Island.
And it is such a wonderful thing. Our library was closed for a year, you know, and we used to have all sorts of book events every month. And it was a terrible time for people.
Yeah, it was a terrible time. It adds a really new dimension to every book when you listen to the author. Everyone has a different process. I find it fascinating. I'm so happy when I'm able to participate in these events.
Is this an Audible book yet?
Yes, it's an Audible book.
Oh, okay. I haven't listened to the Audible book. I love Audible books.
It's it's a strange experience to listen to your words read by someone else. Definitely out of body.
Yeah, it is. Okay, well, I think everybody, this is a wonderful book to read. There's so many, on so many levels, the storyline, the historical line, and just the ability to just get away from the real world, which we, you know, it's funny how that time seems so much calmer than today.
Yeah. But in a sense, too, I think they're universal truths that everyone can find in historical fiction. Stories that happened 80 or even 100 or 200 years ago, there's still the human connection that we all, you know, have these feelings, have these fears, have these hopes and goals. And I think that's what really is wonderful about historical fiction.
You're right. It is. And I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a joy to talk to you. So repeat your website again just so people will hear it. It's easy.
www.evecarlin, K-A-R-L-I-N, one word, .com.
Yeah, go there. And
I'm sorry, Eve Carlin Books.
That's why I think it was in my head. It is Eve Carlin Books because I think...
Yeah. I'm such a good self-promoter.
I knew there was a reason. In the back of my mind, I knew there was something wrong when you gave
Patsy. Thank you, Patsy.
Yes, Eve Carlin Books. And your Facebook is actually vice versa, Carlin Eve, right?
I think it's Eve Carlin Author, the author page on Facebook.
Oh, so we have an author page, Eve Carlin Author. Well, that's that, you know, when we first all started signing up for Facebook, I have like three different names. It drives me crazy. I think I have Patsy with a Z. I have Patsy. I have Joy on Paper, Radio Joy on Paper. Anyway.
That's why we love books.
Yeah, that's why we love books. Exactly. Exactly. Well, I think you're wonderful. You've done a beautiful job with this book. And again, thank you for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you, Patsy.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Oh, I love this book. I love this book. I just wanted... I got myself lost in this book. It was so much fun because I was thinking actually of the U-boats that were here just outside, right? You know, as I'm looking out across the water, there were U-boats out there. And I've talked to several very old people who were around in those days. And they talked to me about how they were looking for U-boats during World War II. And so it's lots of fun to hear about that history. But definitely, this is a wonderful book. Eve Carlin, and it's Track 61, and it's a really great book. Well, it's been a busy day. Anyway, I want to tell everyone, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry. She now has 12 books in her wonderful Witch City Mystery series. And it's time, Hollywood, wake up and let's have a new and exciting series. Let's stream that. Oh, what a wonderful thing it would be, because she's also busy working on book 13. So we'll have a baker's dozen of Witch City Mysteries pretty soon. Anyway, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. And maybe I have to do a mystery series, you know, behind the scenes here at the studio, and I can get Ed involved in being a sleuth with me. How about that, Ed? He likes it. He saluted me. I saluted him. Okay, everybody. Bye-bye. Have a wonderful weekend. Bye.